Well, hello there, top teachers. We are your hosts, Michelle Emerson.
And Bridget Spackman, and we are here to make your life easier by helping you master your time, organization, and productivity as a teacher.
I recently came across something called the stress bucket analogy. Bridget, have you ever heard of this?
I have not.
Okay, I hadn't either until I came across this, but I like it. Essentially, you have a stress bucket, and life is constantly pouring water into your stress bucket from work, family, relationships, responsibilities, finances, health concerns, life circumstances, all of the things. And you have to find ways to drain the bucket because your bucket can only hold so much. And I like to believe we all have different size buckets. We all have different kind of tolerance levels when it comes to the amount of stress that we can handle. But think about your bucket as having like little holes or little spigots at the bottom that you can use to release the water. Almost like, you know, those dispensers, those carafes where you fill it with like lemonade and punch and stuff. So in today's episode, we're going to share some strategies you can use to drain the water from your stress bucket, as strange as that sounds.
I think my stress bucket is clogged. All right, so we're going to move on to a TSH from, would you say Kirsten? How would you say her name? I apologize if I said your name incorrectly. But we're going to listen to her TSH. And she says, I'm sorry for the lengthiness, but I think some backstory is important to fully understand how frustrating time-consuming this TSH is. So everybody buckle in because it's going to be a great one. So this is my 26th year of teaching as an elementary school teacher. Last year, I was one of about 20 teachers in the district who piloted a new math program, Eureka Squared. Most of us thought the program was okay, but emphasize that if we were to adopt this program, we need to have several things to be in place before the end of the school year so that teachers could familiarize themselves with this new program. We said we would need some formal training of the program. We would need materials to arrive so teachers could organize and store the materials, a crate of manipulatives and 6 workbooks for each student, plus the teacher manuals. We also said money should be set aside to be used to pay teachers who chose to work with the curriculum throughout the summer, something that we had done in the past. In March, the decision was made to adopt the program, and we were mandated to start implementing the program with fidelity in the fall. None of what we asked for was put in place. No training in the spring, no money to pay teachers over the summer, and materials weren't ordered until the middle of June. We received a 2-hour training by the district curriculum coordinator one day before the children arrived. But wait, to top things off, the exact same thing happened with ELA. A brand new program was adopted in the spring, CKLA, but without the piloting team's support. No materials arrived until August, and we had a 3-hour training 2 days before the children walked through the door. We were also implementing a new district-wide program called Leader in Me, and we started a new testing program this year, again, with all with minimal useful training. We all feel like brand new teachers. Nothing is familiar from the previous school year, and we spend countless hours outside of the mass agreement, including weekends planning all of these lessons and trying to learn the program while we teach it. Our union has had numerous discussions with admin asking to slow things down, but nothing has changed. District-wide, we had several people resign mid-year and more who have announced that they will not be returning next year. Any suggestions on how to finish the year strong? Our students are not getting the education they deserve. We are all just winging it and trying to stay afloat. I appreciate all you two ladies do every week to support teachers out there. You're both amazing.
This TSH, I feel like, is the perfect summary of, I don't want to say everything that's wrong in education, but a lot of what is wrong in education, which boils down to people making decisions that do not understand the day-to-day and do not understand what is actually best for students. And a lot of times that's because they are answering to people even higher up who are farther removed. This angers me because it is not the teacher's fault. You all asked for what you needed. It was not given to you. And you are now stuck between a rock and a hard place, and it is not fair to you. And as a result, you all are the ones dealing with the stress and overwhelm that come with it. So first and foremost, I think it's important to recognize this is one of those things outside of your control. And I'm not going to say it's not worth stressing over, because I think the stress is unavoidable in terms of the added workload that it puts on you. And it's frustrating beyond belief that your union doesn't seem to actually be doing anything to help. And that is just infuriating, because that defeats the purpose of a union. But in terms of finishing the year strong, I think personally, if this were me, I would have to put boundaries on myself and literally decide, okay, I refuse to spend more than this amount of time outside of my contract hours working. And when I am sitting down to lesson plan, I do the absolute, I don't want to say bare minimum, but I start with the largest priorities and I just get through what I can get through. And even though, again, it's not fair to the students, that is not your fault. It is not your job to pick up the pieces and make something out of an impossible situation. They need to see the failure of the program in order to realize that the way that they adopted it was wrong and did not give teachers the resources that they need. So I would put strict guidelines in place with myself to say, I'm leaving each day by this time. I'm not spending any more than this amount of time on the weekends. Whatever gets done, and that will be it. In order to help with that, I would just try to collaborate with my team teachers as much as possible to really divide and conquer so that you can have what you need to teach the lessons, maybe not to the best extent, but to the minimum extent that's required, and just let stuff fall through the cracks. Let stuff not get done. We need more teachers who are willing to be able to say, look, here's what I'm able to do with what you're giving me. Either give me more or lower the expectations. If teachers keep burning themselves out to try to make it look like they've got it all together and they can still make it work and they can still get stuff done by sacrificing their own mental, physical, emotional health, nothing is going to change, because the higher ups are just going to keep going, oh, okay, well, it's working. You know, this is fine. They're making do. There has to be that straw that breaks the camel's back, and you have to show them that what they are currently giving you is not enough. Bridget, thoughts?
So, I read this TSH and it is everything that I experience on a day-to-day basis. And what I have found in a lot of our school systems is the lack of leadership skills. Mm-hmm. And it is because, just like with teaching, they get thrown into positions. I'm not trying to justify their actions in any way, shape, or form, but it again is a result of how we have built our education system, that we throw leaders into these positions as a principal, as a superintendent, assistant superintendent, and they have never experienced the lives of classrooms. Like, my favorite is hearing a principal say, I was a coach, or I was a band teacher. Not to say that's going to be horrible, right? Because there are some amazing leaders that were band teachers. But at the same time, what I have found that makes a really great leader is someone who is willing and able to roll up their sleeves and do the work with mm-hmm. educators, who go into the classrooms and who are there constantly observing, supporting, asking those questions, teaching, saying, hey, can I come and do a lesson just so that I can get an idea of what this looks like, right? Like, mm-hmm. if I'm asking you to go out and put this into practice, then I need to have an understanding of what this looks like and how else to do that than to put myself in your shoes and experience it. And our leaders don't do that. They're just so, they kind of look at it from this outside perspective of, I'm just trying to manage my team, when that's not what we need. We need somebody who can relate and who can really develop connections to what's happening inside of those classrooms. So everything that Michelle said, I mean, I would wholeheartedly agree with when it comes to setting those boundaries with everything that you have. One of the things that I have told teachers when it comes to them implementing brand new curriculums inside of their schools is to identify the key areas that you want to really put into practice. I know that they're telling you to do it to fidelity, but let's just be honest, ain't nobody got time for that. Like, that's too overwhelming. You're overwhelming your students. You're overwhelming yourself. Like, as a team, it's just too much. identify like one or two areas that you're going to focus on with that curriculum and just move on and slowly build it. Because if you try to do everything all at once, then you're never really going to have a clear understanding of how to do it. Is it actually working? Like all of the things, right? One of the aspects of schools is that we all think that if we just throw this brand new curriculum at you, like, oh, it's going to fix all of our problems and our students' mm-hmm. outcomes are totally going to increase. That's not how it works. Like currently right now, what you're doing is just putting a Band-Aid over it and just hoping and praying that it's actually going to get a little bit better. But it's not going to get any better because you don't have, as you said, you don't have the time to spend getting trained in this. You're not being supported in any way. So to help make it a little bit easier for you is just focus on a couple core areas in each of those curriculums versus trying to do it all, because you just can't. There is no possible way that you can do it all. And yeah, it's a lot. And I'm sorry that this is happening to you.
Yeah. And I think both of our pieces of advice fit together perfectly. It's essentially this idea of, look, accept that you are set up for failure. So you're just going to do the best you can. Find those areas that are most important to implement and focus on those and set a specific amount of time or windows of time and stick to it. And whatever gets done and be okay with what doesn't. Because obviously they were okay giving you this curriculum without the resources that you needed to properly implement it. I feel like that's the perfect transition into today's episode, all about stress. Bridget, did you ever have, or do you have, like a stress ball?
So I have had stress balls in the past. I recently got one that looked like a world and it was wonderful. And then Walter decided to take it out of my bag. And he chewed it up and destroyed it. But currently I am loving it. And it's not a stress ball. It's more like a fidget, but it is like two magnets that stick together and I can slide them and I can flip them. Mm. It is my favorite thing ever. And I take it everywhere I go.
Okay. I had a stress ball once as a kid. It wasn't one that you buy in a store. We made it in school using like a balloon and we filled it with flour.
Yep. Yep.
And then you would like tie it. And so you could squish the flour. And all I remember is it broke on the bus ride home.
Yep,
and
then the bus happens.
Yeah. The bus driver made me sweep it up and I was so embarrassed and that just caused me more stress. So in this episode, we're going to move beyond stress balls, but give you 10 quick stress busters that we believe are perfect for teachers. So if you're feeling that stress and you don't want your dog to chew your stress ball or have it break open on the bus, these are for you.
So let's go ahead and jump on into the very first tip that we have for you, and that is to create a list with a little bit of a caveat here. So when times get stressful, it is very typical because you have like a number of tasks that you're trying to complete. Maybe you have a lot of projects and you have like looming deadlines that are happening on your calendar. That is going to increase your stress, right? Take some time to create a list of what needs to be done. Think of it as a brain dump for all of the tasks that are causing you stress, because they're all just sitting in your head and they're like stewing and like bubbling up in your brain. You can even categorize this list once you are done so that the items that need to be done like really soon at some point, or it would be really nice to have it done. So you can kind of create those little categories to sort all of your items through. This takes everything that is causing you to feel very out of control and it puts that control back into your hands, because you're putting it onto physical paper and identifying what exactly you need to be doing.
And the second one ties into that perfectly. It's to make a plan. If you just have this list of things that you need to do or would be nice to get done, but you don't have a plan for actually accomplishing it, that's just going to cause more stress. So you need to think about when and where you're going to get each item done, as well as about how long you think it will take you. And I really suggest looking into Parkinson's Law. We've discussed this before on the podcast, but essentially Parkinson's Law says that tasks fill the time we allot for them. It's that idea of, if I give myself a week to clean my house, it's going to take me a week. But if I set a time limit of, okay, I have an hour, I will get it done in an hour. Not that it will look exactly the same, but it forces you to prioritize and really hone in on what has to get done versus what would be nice to get done. So I suggest setting deadlines for those to-do list items and come up with an imperfect plan. Again, perfect is not the end goal. Done is better than perfect. And a lot of times when we strive for perfection, and I'm speaking to myself here, we hold ourselves back and we use that as an excuse. We say, oh, well, I'm a perfectionist. So I can't, you know, I'm all or nothing. And I recently heard on a podcast, and I really liked this, that saying you're a perfectionist is a lie because you're not a perfectionist in all areas of your life, just the areas that you choose to be one, right? It's a choice. Mm-hmm. And I know that about myself. And so being able to be realistic and kind of have that conversation with yourself. So here's a quick example. I recently was planning a lot of PDs and I literally looked at, okay, I have a week to get these 5 sessions done. And I allotted myself like no more than 2 days per session. It was one of those deadlines that I knew deep down was realistic, but it also was going to be challenging for me. And I found that to be kind of that Goldilocks. Like you do need it to be actually attainable. You can't set yourself up for failure, going back to that TSH, but you do want it to be something you have to work toward. So decide on goals and try to stick to the plan as much as you can. And then have like some kind of a little reward for yourself, whether it's watching a movie or grabbing dinner at your favorite place, as a way to celebrate once you do get those items checked off. But we're going to take a quick break. We'll let you chew on those a little bit. And then when we come back, we've got 8 more. If you are ready for your productivity to blossom this April, Bridget and I have 3 easy steps you can follow. Step 1 is to head to teachingonthedouble.com/014 to download our free classroom spring cleaning checklist that you can use to get your space tidied up so you can be as efficient as possible.
Step 2 is to head to teachingonthedouble.com/001 to download our free habit tracker and then choose a new simple habit you can adopt this month to help you become your best self, such as ending each workday with a 0 inbox or taking a walk outside to get some fresh air.
Finally, step 3 is to head to teachingonthedouble.com/store to grab our digital personal planner, which is ideal for organizing all aspects of your life, especially outside of the classroom. Every month has planning and reflection pages that will revolutionize your productivity without a doubt. I've been using them every month this year, and I feel like I've finally locked into a system that actually works for getting things done.
Again, those links are teachingonthedouble.com/014 for the free spring cleaning checklist, teachingonthedouble.com/001 for the free habit tracker, and teachingonthedouble.com/store for the digital personal planner. We promise you can complete these 3 steps in less than 5 minutes and allow your productivity to come into full bloom this spring. But for now, back to the episode. We are back, and our next buster of stress buster is going to be to spend some time outdoors. Now, I'm somewhat of an outdoorsy person. I am not like the hiker, the like sporty person. I do some things outside. I like the really beautiful, like quiet, peaceful activities outdoors, right? Like, is that still make me an outdoorsy person?
Yeah, I think there's levels to it. I think when you like say outdoorsy, people think of hiking, but you're right. I think there is something about just enjoying being outside and enjoying nature.
Okay, yeah. So then I'm like a level one, right? but the sunshine and the peacefulness of just being outside is so unbelievably soothing. And so when feeling stressed, take a moment to go on a walk, go to the park, open up the windows to your home if you are not wanting to head outside. My Texas people, I am so sorry. This is probably not the most ideal thing for you because it's, what, already 80, 90 degrees? What's your temperature right now?
Well, yeah, I mean, right now it's like it'll get into the 80s. Although again, we're recording this in March. However, 80s to me, I'm like, I need a jacket sometimes. But yes, midsummer, when it's like over 100,
Oh my gosh. I love you so much. So, and while I might be saying this, like, you might be saying to yourself, well, the thing is I'm just too busy, or I don't have the time to like go on a walk. That's too much for me to do. It does not need to take long. I promise. You can put on a podcast. You can listen to an audiobook. You can just go around the block, which will take you what, like 5 minutes? A little bit is better than nothing. So try to spend about 15 to 20 minutes outside, and I promise you, you're going to feel a tremendous difference in your stress levels just from that little experience.
I feel like the overarching message of this is ditching that all or nothing mentality.
Yes.
So number four is exercise. As Elle Woods says, exercise gives you endorphins, and endorphins make you happy.
Happy people
don't shoot their husbands. They just don't. But when I say exercise, I really mean moving your body. A lot of people overthink this, and they consider exercise to be really strenuous, and it has to be like HIIT or, you know, going for a hard hike. Literally walking, like even walking slowly, pacing is a form of exercise. So do what you enjoy. If you enjoy lifting weights at the gym with headphones on so you can block everything else out like me, great, do that. But if you enjoy taking classes or going for a run or rock climbing or playing with your kids or your dog, like that counts as exercise. It's more about just finding ways to get up off of the couch and move your body. There are so many physical and mental benefits. And that way you get your body moving. When you come back to work, you're able to get more done as a result. So it kind of gives back to you in two ways, because it does relieve that stress. And then it also makes you more productive moving forward.
Listen, having a trampoline, but having that trampoline and doing that with Blaine outside, oh my gosh, that is such a workout. Like, I'm 5 minutes on that trampoline. I'm like, oh, okay, mommy's tired. I'm just going to sit down. We could play popcorn.
Is that where you bounce him?
And he tries to bounce me.
Or he bounces you. Oh, so you reverse roles. Bless you.
Because I'm like, mommy just needs a break. Okay.
Oh, I love that.
Moving into number five is to focus on one thing at a time. You don't need to do all of the things. You just need to do the right things. So instead of trying to tackle all of the to-dos or projects happening, which I know might seem very challenging, focusing on doing the task that is most important or the next one that's coming up on your to-do list, right? It might seem like a challenge because your brain is like wanting to think about all of the different things that are happening around you. But when you pick that one thing to focus on, you're making that like chicken a little bit easier to chew, right? Because we're focusing, we're cutting it into bite-sized pieces, we're ingesting that part before moving on to the next part of it. So it might seem hard, and as you go through, if you need to jot down the things that are happening in your brain while you're trying to complete that task, that's a great way to say, yep, I'm going to come back to you later. Like, this is my way telling my brain, I know, but I'm not doing that right now. I'm going to focus on the task that I need to get complete.
Yeah. And number six, I already mentioned this, but we're going to dig into it a little bit more. Remind yourself that done is better than perfect. This is for all my perfectionists out there. Something I repeat to myself a lot, and I'll explain what this means, is pick the dang zebra. So this actually came from a session that I attended at a TPT conference several years ago. So this was geared toward TPT sellers. But the presenter was talking about how she was trying to pick out a piece of zebra clip art to go on like a worksheet or whatever. And she had spent like an hour trying to find the perfect zebra, right? Like, she was looking through all these different clip art packs, and it's like, no, that zebra's not good enough. That one's not good enough. And finally, she had to say to herself, like, it's a zebra. Pick the dang zebra. Like, does it really matter that much? And I repeat that to myself all the time, because I will overanalyze the smallest details. And as a result, I don't make any progress forward. So I will literally repeat to myself, either pick the dang zebra or done is better than perfect. You can always go back and make improvements later. Think about it almost like your sloppy copy that you would have students do. if you run out of time, it'll get the job done, but you can't perfect something that isn't done to begin with. So get it done and then go back and add in those details, make it as close to perfect as you can if time allows, or even if you still care, because sometimes you get to the end and you're like,
amen,
thank goodness that's done. I want to go do something else.
Right? That is so true. Number 7 is to take a break from online life. Now, I feel like I talk about this a lot, but it's also because I know that it is a stress trigger for me specifically. And so there has to be somebody else out there that feels the exact same way. I cannot be alone in this, I'm hoping. So comparison is our worst enemy, and it can only amplify the stress that we are feeling when we have a lot that's happening in our personal lives. And when we go online, whether it's Facebook, Instagram, while it might seem like, oh, I'm just taking like a mental break, what does our brain automatically start doing? We're looking at everybody else who seems like they're doing it, they're killing it, they're achieving all of the wonderful things. And you're like, well, I'm not achieving anything. I'm sitting here on Instagram. And then that comparison monster comes out and you start to feel like you are not worthy, like you are not at your best, and you're putting yourself down, and that is never good. So instead of taking a break, and I put that in quotes, on social media, step away from social media and find other outlets for your breaks. This can be reading, it can be creative projects, it can be outdoors activities, it could be cooking, it can be organizing, anything that just keeps you away from online and having that comparison monster creep up.
And number 8, again, ties really well into that one. It's to get creative. And I use the word creative very loosely because I think what all of us find as a creative outlet is very different depending on our preferences. But essentially, the goal is to work on some kind of a project or a task where you get to be in a quote unquote open mode instead of a closed mode. Now, this comes from it's a speech from John Cleese, which he was in Monty Python, The Holy Grail, but he also played Nearly Headless Nick in Harry Potter.
Nearly headless. How can you be nearly headless? Sorry.
Anyway, he talks about like sparking creativity. And when you are in a closed mode, you are very structured, detail oriented. Whereas open mode is kind of more of that artistic mindset. You allow yourself to just play and explore. And it's important to have times where you're in both, right? You need those times in open mode to kind of explore options, but then you have to switch to closed mode to be able to actually execute and get stuff done. It's really hard to execute in an open mode, but I think our society forces us into closed mode a majority of the time. So making sure that you allow yourself to get into that open mode, you should have the least amount of structure as possible, incorporate play, and focus on things that you're passionate about. For me, art is stressful. I do not enjoy art because I like rules, and art doesn't have rules, and that doesn't jive well with me. So for Bridget, getting creative might mean making pottery or doing looming or some of the other typical crafting things that you think of. For me, I don't enjoy those activities. I prefer things like designing slides. That is my way of getting to be creative. And even organization, I love opening up a drawer and going, all right, how can I better organize this? That is a form of creativity for me. It's this, like, I'm going to play around with things until it fits just right. So it's not about doing art. It's about finding ways to be in that open mode and have less structure and incorporate play and have it be something that you are passionate about. It doesn't have to be just what you see online, like coloring. Not my jam.
Not your jam.
But not my jam. But find other things that are your jam and make sure you allow for time for those.
As like a 1 minute sidetrack here, I have found an app that I'm loving at the moment. It is coloring, but it is not the typical coloring because it's like the color by numbers, but it does everything for you. So like when you click on the color, it like highlights where it is on the coloring board. All you do is tap. It is like the most soothing thing I have ever experienced, and I love it.
I'm happy that works for you. I feel like for me, I'd be like, what am I doing with my time right now?
I know. I know.
But again, it's we're different. Everybody's that's totally different. Fine.
I know.
Yep.
Okay. So the next one is to go kind of, again, piggybacking off of Michelle, is to clean and organize. Cleaning can be incredibly therapeutic, and it can also make you feel like you're in control of your environment when everything else around you is feeling a bit chaotic. So spend some time organizing. And while some of you might think that this is like task avoidance, and it could possibly be a little bit of that, it does help to just bring those stress level down because everything feels in its place and organized, and that organization helps you feel grounded. So if you're thinking that like tackling something is like a closet is way too much, then just don't do that. I'm not telling that you have to do a giant closet or something to that extent. You can have this be very superficial cleaning where you're just like taking everything in sight and you're going to just like pick out a few things here and there and just kind of hide the rest of it. That's totally fine. If it's out of sight, it's out of mind, and that's okay.
I know I mentioned this on the last episode that I read the book Tiny Habits and absolutely loved it. So there, one thing he really hits home on in that book is about celebrating when you perform a habit and having that celebration be immediate. And one thing he suggests is doing what he calls a celebration blitz, where you find like the messiest little corner of your home or your office or your classroom. You set a timer for 3 minutes and just kind of tidy it up. But each little thing that you move or put away, you like celebrate yourself. And it doesn't have to be a like, woohoo. It can literally be a smile or like a mental dialogue of like, ooh, great job. But you do that for 3 minutes. And I did it the other day in my office because my desk was a hot mess after getting back from this conference.
Stop it.
And it was so fun. Like, it was just basic, but I had a great time.
Your
so
desk
do a
mess.
Little blitz.
I feel like next time I need a picture evidence of this.
When I got home from my PD, all the materials, I just had them stacked.
Yeah.
I've also kept all the books I've been reading this year in a big stack, and they were like up on the side of my desk. I moved them over to the corner. So just little things. But for me, it was messy. Okay, number 10, and I think this is the perfect way to wrap it up. Do what's hardest first. I have an analogy for you, and I think this analogy is going to really hit home because when I heard this, all of a sudden, I was like, I get it. A lot of times people hear do what's hardest first, and they're like, yeah, but I don't want to. This analogy helps you realize that you have to do what's hard either way. So imagine, let's say you've been sitting in a PD, and you walk out of the PD because you have to go to the potty. And when you walk out, you walk into a stairwell. There's stairs that go upstairs and there's stairs that go downstairs. There is a bathroom on each floor, right? There's stairs upstairs or a bathroom upstairs. There's a bathroom downstairs. You have to decide which one you're going to go to. Most people just logically would go, oh, well, I'm going to go downstairs. Why would I go up the stairs? Because I'd much rather go downstairs in order to go to the bathroom. But if you think about it, either way, you're going to go down a set of stairs and up a set of stairs. Because if you choose to go down first, you're coming up on the way back. Whereas if you choose to go upstairs to use the bathroom, you get to come down on the way back. Either way, you're going up and down. It's just the order. Now, granted, if you have to really pee, like you might choose to go downstairs first just because it's easier. But that aside, realizing that you're going to have to do the hard thing at some point, get the hard thing done first. I have been repeating this to myself so often, even little things like at the gym. If I have to carry weight over to the barbell, I'll carry it to the side that's furthest away from me first because I go, well, I've got to load up each side. Let me get the longer walk out of the way first. And then the second one is shorter and it feels much better. And I just feel like when you have this mentality, it makes everything else that comes after feel easier, and that leads to more motivation. It's kind of that idea of eat the frog, which just means get the hard thing done first. Even if you don't get anything else done, at least you did the hard thing.
Yeah.
So it's just a good little reminder that I feel like we all need from time
to time.
I like
the steps analogy.
Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
So I'm going to quickly review over our 10 stress busters for teachers. So stress buster number one is creating a list. Number two is to make a plan. Number three is to spend some time outdoors. It doesn't have to be a lot. Number four is to exercise, and that can look differently for everyone. Number five is to focus on one thing at a time. Number six is to remind yourself that done is better than perfect. Number seven is to take a break from online life. Number eight is to get creative and whatever that looks like for you. Number nine is to clean and organize. And number 10 is to do what's hardest first.
So if you enjoyed this episode, we would love for you to subscribe to the podcast. That way you're notified every time we drop a new episode, which is Thursday mornings. If you want more information, more productivity tools, or you have your own time-sucking hurdle that you would love to be featured on a future episode, head over to our website. It's teachingonthedouble.com. From there, you can click on TSH to submit yours. You can also click on store in order to purchase any of our digital planning products. We have, in addition to the actual planners, we have stickers, we have inserts, all of the fun things to help keep your life organized both in and out of the classroom. If you are enjoying our podcast, it would really, really help us out if you would leave a review. It only takes a few seconds, but it helps our podcast get into the ears of so many other teachers. And until next time, be timely,
stay organized,
and be productive.
Bye-bye.
See ya.